hello, welcome in. It's another edition of the Falcon Cast podcast on AtlantaFalcons.com, iTunes, wherever you're listening to us. Don't adjust your screen. We are without John Michaels this week.
It's all about two chains,
two guys. I like to say whenever the host is gone, I like to say when dad's away. And so we get to do whatever we want to. But John is having some wisdom tooth issues.
He's having some very serious teeth issues right now.
Yes.
He says his wisdom tooth. It feels like somebody's stabbing him in his mouth. So you guys go and wish John Michaels a safe and I want to say a pain-free recovery with his teeth.
Yeah, because he's going to be in some pain. We're recording this here on Tuesday, and he's having the surgery this afternoon to get the tooth in question pulled. Mm. So all our best out to him. But we're gonna just rock and roll with the two of us. We're gonna try. We're gonna see what we can do. We are going to talk about all the Falcons news that has kind of come up over the last week. Terry Rubisky heading off and some coaching changes there. We'll get into a couple of guys added to the Pro Bowl. Chris Morgan named the Pro Football Focus
nice
O-line coach of the year, nice, which I know has surprised some fans out there. We will break with Bosak. We've got a video of the week. I cannot say the word that's on the script.
You got to let Bosak say it. It's his break, so we're going to let him title it to say.
Yes.
All right. The clue for this week and the video of the week is head.
There it is. That just happened.
You'll see why.
That just happened, people.
Okay. All right. And then we're going to get to Picks to Click, which is going to come down to a thrilling,
it just happened,
thrilling
to me
finish.
Ooh, these two guys right here. I saw it and I was like, man.
Thrilling finish. This is going to be big.
And it's going to be one of the better games, too. I think it's going to be an interesting game, Denver and Carolina, and how interesting it comes down to the, you know, the elder statesman of the groups right here to be able to hold it down. You know, I won in the regular season, and here we are again. I'm in the championship game again versus this guy to my right, your left. So it's going to be interesting.
It's going to be fun.
You know,
we'll get into that a little later, but let's talk about the conference championship games. I know you know, Falcons fans want to hear about Falcons, but, man, we'd be remiss if we didn't mention kind of a fun championship weekend. I know that I had a lot of fun watching the Broncos game.
Yeah.
I did not have any fun watching the second game. It was an interesting – but I think it's going to be a good – Super Bowl matchup.
I do too. I think you get the number one offense versus the number one defense, and you watch both games, and coming out of both games, you're like, okay, that team I think is going to win the Super Bowl. Then you turn around and watch the second game and watch Carolina, you're like, how do they lose? But Denver, their defense is beyond ridiculous. Yeah. They're front seven, and they got guys on the back end who can cover, but they rush the passer like nobody else. Von Miller, you got DeMarcus Ware. I mean, they got some guys who can get around the corner, and they're athletic, too. They got athletic linebackers that can run, and that's what makes this matchup really interesting because of what Carolina does on offense, and we know how athletic Cam is and what their offense tries to do to defenses. It's going to be really interesting. Obviously, all the talk was about Peyton coming to the game and his arm strength, and in clutch time, he just makes plays. In clutch time, he's that guy. He obviously doesn't have all the physical tools that he's had when he was younger, but he's still Peyton Manning. He's in the Super Bowl. He's got a chance to ride out into the sunset like his boss, John Elway.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it even more intriguing is how many people is going to root for Peyton Manning just because they want that type of ending for him.
Right.
It's going to be so interesting to see. And on the other side, Carolina obviously have been doing it all year long. They still have the one asterisk on the record from these guys here. So whenever you look at their record and it has that one, you know it's from our own Dirty Birds, Atlanta Falcons. But Carolina is intriguing. They're peaking on both sides of the ball. I talked to my boy Thomas Davis. Obviously, he broke his arm in the game. Yeah. But one thing that he says is there's no way I'm not going to play.
I can't envision him not playing.
I mean, my man just made his first Pro Bowl this year. Now they're going to the Super Bowl. And you know how hard it is to get back to not just a playoff, but to a Super Bowl. Yeah. You're not going to miss it.
You would have to chop off a limb for him to not.
I'm talking to a couple guys who play, and I said, what would make you miss a Super Bowl? I said, things would have to be just dangling for you not to play in a Super Bowl. Yeah. But I'm looking forward to seeing what Carolina can do versus that defense. And, obviously Luke Kuechly and what he's done. And, they got a great front as well. And we talk about how Denver gets up the field on the outside with Von Miller. They got the same thing on the inside with Tulele and K1 Short. I mean, it's going to be interesting, man. It's going to be a great matchup. I'm looking forward to it.
That's really where it comes down to for me is that battle in the trenches, as cliche as that sounds. Because, we saw a couple of weeks ago where Arizona really got after Aaron Rodgers, was able to get him off the spot and make him move and make him feel a little bit pressured. Then they go to Carolina against a very good offensive line that just pass protected like crazy against Cam Newton. And I've said this a million times on this show that the key to beating Cam Newton is you got to hit him a couple of times. You got to shake him a little bit. You got to rattle him a little bit because he'll go in the tank. It's going to be hard for Denver, as good as they are, to make that happen. But it's also going to be a huge challenge for that Panthers offensive line that's done a great job of protecting him this year to keep him upright. That's one of my big keys for this game. I'm really torn, okay? And I want to this is a big subject that's on Twitter. It was over the weekend.
Yeah.
Being the social media guy here with the Falcons, I feel I've got to bring up the social media topics.
Rooting for your rivals.
Yeah. Rooting for your rivals. Now, here's where I stand on this. I never root for my rivals.
Yeah.
Under any circumstances, I would never, ever do it. Now, we're in a weird place. We're in SEC country.
Right.
And everybody takes pride at Vanderbilt out there screaming SEC, SEC, SEC. They haven't won anything in ever.
Yeah.
So some of that is permeating over to the NFL side of things, where people are saying, oh, NFC South, NFC South. But I don't know that the two things don't apply for me, or they're – I don't know. They don't connect.
It's kind of – for me, it's like the double negative for me. It's like I got three guys on the Panthers team who I played with in college. We were on the field here. Like, me and Thomas Davis came to the University of Georgia in the same class.
Take
like,
all that out of it, though.
That's hard. How do you take that out?
I know. But take all that out of it. We have to approach this subject like we don't have personal connections on the team. And we've got personal connections to both teams.
Right.
But – you have to think about it from – do you – if you're – I mean, you're a Georgia guy. Do you ever root for Florida in the national championship game?
Ooh. See, that's even – I want to – it's kind of the same thing. Like, you want to root for an SEC team to win. But like you said, it's your rival. You don't want them to be a little bit above you. And that hurts you. You don't really want to do that either.
Because all they can do is talk smack to you.
Right. We got one. And that's what I hear all the time. When was the last time you guys won one? Or you know, it always comes back to that. So with that, the bragging rights, I would say, oh, no. Because I don't want them to have the bragging rights.
The thing that gets me is that if Carolina wins, and everybody kind of knows this, if Carolina wins, the Falcons would be the only NFC South team without a Super Bowl title.
Wow.
That would be tough to deal with from a trash talk perspective. It's tough to talk trash when you don't have the rings and you don't have the trophy. So that's what I'm concerned about. I want to be able to still talk trash.
I think from the overall perspective, it goes to, like I mentioned, how do you want – are you a big fan of Peyton Manning too? You want him to go out in a blaze of glory with his last one with a Super Bowl ring? Or are you on the other side of – man, everybody said Cam couldn't do this, he couldn't do that, and you want him to get it just to shut a lot of people up and say, hey, he did it his way, having fun, having a good time, and it shows that he can happen. Right. And it's all about the old school versus new school. I mean, you got so many different narratives in this game, so it's hard. It'll be interesting to see how everybody is swayed one way or another, because I think everybody has a different meaning in their mind, or a different way that they can say, this is why I'm rooting for this team or that team.
Yeah. So let's get back to the connections. We'll get to the Falcons here in a second, but you have three guys on Carolina.
Thomas Davis, Charles Johnson, and Fernando Velasco. Played with all three guys. Fernando, was one of my offensive linemen. Charles, he came in a year after me, and We played together, so those three connections are huge for me. I know Demaryius Bebe Thomas really well because went to Tech and all that kind of stuff. Me and Aqib Talib have the same agent, so I know all these guys. I see them every year, so there's connections on both sides, and it's hard to pick a team and say, all right, I want this guy to win one way or another.
Well, you're just gonna
beat I the love knocking over way. The
We're
mic,
just
boy.
Beat the hell out of the microphone every week.
Gotta be tough, buddy.
Yeah. So for me, it's Robert McClain,
Bobby Mack. I forgot Bobby Mack. Yeah,
cornerback for the Panthers.
Could have had two picks in the game.
Two picks. He's very, very close, but he's turning out to be a player for them. He's starting at opposite Josh Norman. Very good friend of mine. Love him to death. He's one of the nicest people I've ever met in my life. I can't root against him. On the other side of things, you got Vance Walker, who played here in Atlanta.
Vance
started out here, and just another one of the nicest guys in the world that you'd ever want to meet. Hilarious. Yeah. So it's tough because you've got these personal connections. At the same time, I've got to deal with the Atlanta Falcons mentions, and that almost trumps all of my rooting interests. That's kind of where I'm at. So I don't know. I'm a game time decision. We've got another week to talk about the Super Bowl coming up, but let's get into the Falcons here. So the big move so far in the last week has been to the coaching staff. We've seen Terry Rubisky leave to go to Tennessee. Become the offensive coordinator there under Mike Mularkey, who he's got a past with. We're very happy for Terry to move up and to have this opportunity. But it's bittersweet because we love that guy. We talked about him last week on the show. Now, the Falcons make the move. They bring in Jerome Henderson, a defensive coach from Dallas, and make him the passing game coordinator, and then take Raheem Morris, a coach who does not have one day of offensive experience. And move him to wide receivers coach. Now, this has people a little confused. And so we're going to try to hopefully maybe sort that out and maybe give some reasons as to why they went with this move. I think I'll start out and just say we talked on this show last week about how when you replace a Terry Rubisky in a room that's got Roddy White, Julio Jones, Devin Hester, very strong personality kind of guys, you need somebody who's going to connect with them first and foremost.
Right.
Before the coaching even comes into play, you need to be able to handle that room in a way that they can connect with, or else there's going to be a mutiny.
Very true. Very true. I think all those guys, like you mentioned, you got to be able to connect with them because all those guys are emotional. And I know sometimes you may see Julio out there and he doesn't look like he's emotional, but Julio is one of the most emotional guys when playing a game, when he's in the moment. And I think there's some pros and cons to having Raheem Morris. And I think the first one you mentioned was never been on that side, never coached receivers. So that's a huge concern, is how do you kind of balance out where you are as far as being a defensive guy the whole time, now you coach receivers. I think he definitely has a personality. If you've ever been to a Falcons practice or you ever met Raheem Morris, you know he has that personality. He has that demeanor where he can demand respect from these guys, and I think they'll listen. But I think they're going to be in the same mind frame as everybody else is. This dude's never played it. Right. This dude doesn't really know what we're going through. And I promise you, those guys think about that. Sure. Guys, especially on this level, they want somebody who – they know it's been through what they've been through, and they can relate to it and say, all right, this is kind of things I got going on. One of the things I can look at that's a positive is, obviously, he coached defensive backs. So his whole everything was studying receivers. It's studying routes. It's studying how guys come in and out of routes. And I'm sure he can tell those guys some little nuances of, these are some things that DBs are looking at. Mm-hmm. These are things that defense are trying to do to a big-time receiver like Julio. And I think that goes a long way. I think that goes a long way into helping those guys become better players. I think he's going to help them become smarter players because he's going to teach them those things that defenses are trying to do to them. Not to say that Rubisky wouldn't do that, but with him being – all the time on the defensive side of the ball, he can understand exactly what the mind frame is and what they're trying to do when they're playing outside leverage, inside leverage, when they're playing certain coverages, or what they're trying to take away from different receivers or even your favorite route combinations. He will know how to beat those type of things. So I think it's going to be one of those things that's going to take time. He's going to have to understand these guys on a different level than just, all right, I got to learn how to stop you. Now I got to teach you how to do certain things. And I think that's going to be the thing that's going to take a little time. And it's a good thing it's starting now, so the guys, when they get into, you know, OTAs and all that, they can work out the kinks and know how he coaches and what he expects from them. So it'll be interesting to see, especially as the time goes on, how that bond really comes together.
Here's why I think that this is not as big a leap as people are making it out to be. And we'll start with the point that you made about how you're coaching defensive players who are going to be going against your now offensive players. And there's things that you can teach them and show them that maybe you're just coming from a different perspective, right? I think that ultimately helps. The other reason is because that's a mature room right now. Okay, yeah. You've got Justin Hardy, you're trying to develop him, but he's got some really good mentors above him. So I don't know that it's necessarily the biggest attribute to bring in a guy who you want to coach and develop, and I think Raheem can do that. I just don't know that it's as necessary right now as it is for you to just have somebody who can connect.
I think that's a great point, because, like you mentioned, these guys are mature enough to know, and they've been in this league long enough to know this is how the business goes, and you have to make the best out of that situation. And having a guy like Raheem is a guy, it's not like he just coming from nowhere. This is his first stint. He's been around. Obviously, this is his second year here, but he's been around the league. Everybody knows what he's about. So they still have that respect there. And like you mentioned, you have the young Justin Hardy, but like you mentioned, he's got the Julio. He's got the Roddy around him to show him the ropes and say, hey, this is how we work. This is how, when you have a change, how it should be happening.
Right. And so the third point that I want to bring up, I think, is that this is our assistant head coach. This is a former NFL head coach.
Yes.
So when we sit here and say, you know, he doesn't have any offensive experience, that's absolutely not true. He may be a defensive-minded coach who's coached defensive positions and coordinated on the defensive side of things, but he has experience in game planning against defenses.
Mm-hmm.
So I really feel like, again, this isn't as big a leap as I think some people are really making this out to be. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he doesn't have maybe the pedigree of a Terry Rubisky. He hasn't played the position, but he does have experience in game planning for defenses.
And one thing that I know about coaches, usually during this time of the year or during the offseason, the offensive coaches get with the defense coach and say, all right, tell us some of the weak things or some of the things that you saw in our offense that can, you know, be exposed a little bit. And they do the same thing for defense. So both sides understand what they're trying to do. So it gives them an extra advantage of what they're trying to do on both sides of the ball, which helps them ultimately. Obviously, defense and offense have to work together throughout the season. So there's a common bond between the two that says, all right, these are some of the things that we like to do versus your certain coverages. Mm-hmm. And obviously they come through with a game plan each and every week, you know, Monday through Friday, work on certain different things. So throughout the year, Raheem has seen what his offense likes to do. And plus, he's been with Shanahan.
Right.
So he knows the type of offense he's running.
Right.
And I think that what makes it even an easier to come over to the offense, because he knows Shanahan that well. He knows what he likes to do. He's been around him, and he understands exactly what that offensive side of the ball is trying to do against a defense. So I think that's what helps the most. And a lot of people look at it like he's just a defensive coach that's just coming over here to offense, but he's been around this system for a while, and he's been around this league for a while.
So speaking of defensive coaches, you add Jerome Henderson, and you know, not a lot of people know about this guy. I think in my limited research, it seems like he's got a very good defensive head for the game.
Yeah.
You know, he worked with some really good players in Dallas.
Yeah, and one thing you guys may not understand what it is, Jerome Henderson, he's called the passing game coordinator. And what that is they primarily worry about the passing game. They worry or they try to figure out what offense are trying to do against the defense in the pass game. There's a run game coordinator as well. There's a guy who works on just third down. There's a guy who works on red zone. So and he's over the entire passing game, so that when they come into a game, here's what they like to do. Here are the routes they like to run. Here's what they like to do on third down and long and medium and short. So he has a long pedigree, like you mentioned. He's been in Dallas. He's been around a bunch of big-time players. especially on the back end. But this guy is a guy who I'm looking forward to seeing, and it should be interesting to see what he brings to this defense already, who got better last year. From the season before, was, you know, ranked last. Now they're, you know, around the middle of the pack. So you can only expect them to go up and be even better.
This is one of the storylines that we will definitely be keeping an eye on as we go through the spring, just to see the impact that Jerome has, that Raheem have. But another storyline that a lot of people are talking about, and get used to this, because this is going to be all off season until this whole situation gets settled. This is going to be the question: what is the future of Roddy White?
Yeah.
And it already started on Monday. There was a conference call with Dan Coach Quinn. Yeah. And, you know, there were questions that, you know, Coach got on the phone to talk about the coaching changes, and inevitably the question comes up: what is the future of Roddy White? Is he going to stick around? Are you going to get rid of him? What is happening? We saw that he took a lesser role on the offense in 2015 under Kyle Shanahan. That certainly created a lot of questions here. Coach says he's under contract and he's committed. Roddy says, I'm a Falcon forever and ever, amen. And every indication is saying that he's not going anywhere, yet people seem to really think that it might be in the offing this offseason.
I think it's because of the production he had this year leads people to believe that he won't be here. Whenever a receiver starts to decline, you instantly think, okay, he doesn't have it anymore, he's done. And I don't know if you guys must follow these guys on Twitter. Jay does an outstanding job keeping you guys up to date with everything that's going on. And if you didn't catch it, the main quote that was in there, we're talking about Coach Quinn, was he said, you know, Roddy's under contract right now. And there are a lot of ways you could take that. There are a lot of different paths you can go down to kind of say, okay, Coach Quinn is just saying he's under contract. That's it. That's all I can say about it. But the main thing is you want him to be here. I would like Roddy to be here. Mm-hmm. I think Roddy still has a bunch of football left in him. And I think Roddy's one of those guys who's so motivated to continue to get better. And he'll tell you point blank, this was not the season that he wanted. But I think whenever you think there's a decline in production, people begin to think that they're gone or they don't have it anymore. And, you know, Coach Quinn is a guy who I know who's always looking to tweak his roster. We talk about it all the time. He's always looking a way to get them better. He's always looking at ways to bring guys in or find a way to motivate them. And I think this is another situation. And we don't want Roddy to go because we know there's a couple different areas that he can go. Obviously, Rubisky and Mularkey, who, you know, he had here in Atlanta, both in Tennessee. Tampa with Dirk Cutter, who, you know, Roddy had some big numbers under, is in Tampa. So we definitely want to see him go to another rival. But I hope he's around. I hope he sticks around. And I hope it works out between the Falcons and Roddy.
Yeah, it's one of those things that's going to be prevalent this offseason until
– and they don't have to do anything until maybe June or something.
Yeah, right? Yeah. I mean, it'll be kind of a wait and see. I think that, you know, going back to Coach's comment about how he's under contract, you never say never on anything. You know, that I think yeah. We've learned that in the NFL. I think, you know, anytime you say, well, you know, yes, absolutely 100% he's going to be around – it doesn't do you any good down the line. So anything can happen, but we certainly hope that, you know, Roddy is a lifelong Falcon. I know a lot of people out there hope that as well. A former Pro Bowler. And speaking of Pro Bowlers,
whoop, whoop.
We've got two more. We have doubled the amount of Pro Bowlers this week with
nice.
Patrick DeMarco and Desmond Trufant being named. They were alternates. For the Pro Bowl, didn't quite get in on the first go-around, but as we see in the playoffs and with the fact that the Pro Bowl is now between the conference championship games and the Super Bowl, there are a lot of guys that end up dropping out of that annual trip to Hawaii. So some replacements named. It seems like everybody but us has been named to the Pro Bowl at this point. You've got to think – so many people out there thought that Patrick DeMarco and Desmond Trufant should have been shoe-ins for the Pro Bowl. I think this might be a case where the name recognition doesn't exactly get them to where they want to be. But I think starting with now and making the Pro Bowl, I think, gets you on that path to people knowing who you are.
No doubt about it. And you hit it spot on. That's one thing I thought of. I said DeMarco should have easily been on there – He shouldn't even have been an alternate. He should have been going from day one. So I'm glad, regardless of how they got there, because the guys going to the Super Bowl, I don't care. As long as they had the chance to go. Obviously, we think really highly of Desmond Trufant. Of course, every defensive back's going to have things that happen throughout the season because, you know, hey, you're only human. But both these guys we thought played at a high level. Devontae and Julio are already going. So to add two more guys from this franchise, and like you mentioned, I think the name value of it, guys seeing them there, guys seeing them on the list, it gives them an upper hand when the years come. And guys are like, oh, yeah, he's been there before. I remember him. And everybody's going to be watching the Pro Bowl. So it's going to be good to see those guys get a chance to go. I'm really happy for DeMarco because of we've talked about it throughout the year. We talked about it at the beginning of the year. He had a chance to be gone with Mooney playing so well during the preseason and take full advantage of his opportunity and play really well. I think he was maybe the highest-rated fullback, right?
Highest-rated fullback.
Highest-rated fullback.
And it wasn't close. Yeah. Second place was not close.
Played really well. Obviously, Tolbert, who was down in Carolina, gets a lot of the love for fullbacks, but he did an outstanding job this season, paving the way for Devontae, who we know had a great year. And in front of Devontae was Patrick DeMarco, probably about 60-70% of the time, creating holes along with that offensive line. So it's great to see both those guys go, and I'm sure it's going to be a lot more to come in the future.
Yeah, you know, the Pro Bowl is one of those things that's gotten a lot of flack over the last couple of years as guys go, and, you know, the ever-present threat of being injured in a game that doesn't really mean a whole lot. You know, the NFL has really tried to toy around with the concept and play around a little bit. I love what they do with, you know, taking the conferences out of it. Like, let's have a draft.
Just the best
let's
of the
see.
Best.
Yeah, let's see. I would love to see, like, a Julio Jones lined up
Devontae's
against
Devontae's a captain.
Devontae's a captain.
Saw that on Atlanta Falcons Twitter page.
That's where we announced that. But I'd love to see you've got the opportunity to potentially see teammates go up against teammates, and I think that's always really fun. One of the things that I want to clear up, though, is this misconception that I think a lot of fans have that players don't really care about the Pro Bowl. I think once you make a Pro Bowl, you can say you are a one-time Pro Bowl. You are a former Pro Bowl. You're a Pro Bowl
it's
fullback.
It's in front of your name.
Yeah, exactly.
It's,
I mean, it's
it doesn't
just
matter.
Like Hall of Famer, right, or whatever, all pro. You know, you're constantly – it becomes part of your legacy. You can speak to a little bit about, you know, when guys get named to this, I mean, it really means a lot to them, doesn't it?
I mean, just to bring up a guy who, you know, I've talked about before, is Thomas Davis, who going into his – 12th year, I believe, and he makes the Pro Bowl for the first time.
That's a shame.
And when I talked to him, he act like it was beyond Christmas, you know what I mean? The fact that you get recognized for your play, your production, and, you know, to be, you know, be there with the best of the best in the National Football League means so much. I mean, there's so many guys who play so long and never get that opportunity to play in the Pro Bowl or even be named Pro Bowl. I don't care if you go one time or you go 10 times. Before they say your name, they're going to say Pro Bowler so-and-so. And that's right. Just how it goes. And that means a lot to be a part of that team, to be named that by your peers, the guys that you go against, the guys who you thought hated you. But they say, guess what? That guy gets after it, and he deserves to be playing with the best players in the National Football League. So it's one of those things that's like the – for guys who make a lot of money, for guys who we know are put on a pedestal at times. This is what makes them really want to play the game at the highest level because of the opportunities you have to make it to the All-Star team or make it to, you know, All-Pro or Pro Bowl team. So it's great. Those guys relish when that comes. And I know I've been on teams where it's so big where coaches bring the whole team around and, you know, They say the guy's name, and you know some guys are standing there like, man, I hope I make it. And you hear it, and you can just see the reaction on their face. It's like a sense of relief. I mean, think about a guy like Devontae Freeman this year, man. Last year, you know, he was, you know, he played sparingly here and there, and coming to the season, nobody knew really what to expect from him. And then you get to go out and you get to show it, and you get to put Pro Bowl behind your name when you get a chance to really excel.
Yeah.
It's nothing like it, man.
I love this for Devontae because he's such a humble kid.
Yeah.
Comes from humble beginnings and really has kind of earned everything that he's gotten in life. And, you know, so it's a lot of fun to see him and kind of live vicariously through him because he is so excited to be down in Hawaii right now. You know, the draft, which is our, by the time this goes up, will have already commenced. But I'm just going to guess that he had a pretty good role in the draft there. And, you know, we'll be looking for more from him. Keep checking AtlantaFalcons.com. We'll have some stuff from the guys down there as well. And remember, you can watch the Pro Bowl at 7 p.m. Sunday night on ESPN. So it should be a really good time, a lot of fun. We'll be live tweeting along with you. So, you know, make sure to have your Twitter screens open for that game. All right, let's get to the last thing here on our script. This is a shocker for some people. And, you know, it's kind of interesting because you've got a couple of classes of people who the one class thinks that Pro Football Focus, which is a it's a grading website. If you're not familiar, they've really picked up steam over the last 5 years as a reliable set of analytics to grade players by. So they are pretty meticulous when it comes down to how they grade.
Mm-hmm.
They have about four different layers of grading where individual people are watching individual plays over and over and over again for each individual player, if that makes sense. And then they come up with a grade, and it's all very complicated, and there's math, and I don't want to talk about that. So then there's another set of people who think it's complete garbage.
Yeah.
So we know that the Falcons' offensive line had some struggles in 2015. I think what a lot of people are just completely missing is how strong the tackle play was from both Jake Matthews and Ryan Schrader. And I'd love to spend some time on Bosak. Write this down. Next week, we need to talk about Ryan Schrader because I'm tired of people not knowing how great he was in 2015. We're going to write that down.
My gym watch right here.
There we go.
Gym spirit. I'm
going to write this S-C-H-R-A-E-D-R. All right, so we're going to talk about that next week. But, you know, the Falcons' offensive line was graded by Pro Football Focus as the number four offensive line in the league, which I know is everybody, because I saw from the mentions, everybody was like, what? What?
No way.
So let's talk about this. Is it ever as bad as you think, and is it ever as good as you think?
And that's the biggest thing. It's never as bad, and it's never as good. But statistically, you look at what the Falcons did this year offensively. Matt Ryan, again, went over 4,000 yards. Julio Jones, 1,800 yards. Devontae Freeman, over 1,500 all-purpose yards. This doesn't happen without the big guys up front giving those guys time to run the football, giving Matt time to throw the football down the field. Obviously, a lot of stuff is timing. A lot of stuff is get the ball out on time at the quarterback position, Julio making plays, or whoever's catching the rock making plays. But it all starts up front. These guys creating holes, creating gaps, getting up to the next level when Devontae gets past the first level of blocks. There's a lot of thing that goes into watching offensive line play. It's not all about the pressures and the sacks, because that's going to happen. Every team's going to have pressures. Every team's going to have sacks. But it's all about creating those lanes and avenues for your skilled players to make plays. And a lot of times you focus so much on the plays that weren't right that you miss out on the plays that really were good for you. And I know the Falcons offense wasn't as explosive as it was in previous years, but this still was an offense at any given time could go and score a lot of points, or could go score on any given drive to make it tough on another team. And I think you talk to opposing defensive coordinators or opposing defenses, and they'll tell you, this offense is hard to stop. Not just because you have Julio, but you have so many different ways to hurt a defense, and it starts up front. These guys giving them time. These guys knowing who to block, knowing when to go downfield, knowing all the nuances of offensive line play that's made them the number four ranked offensive line in the National Football League.
Yeah, you know, there's a couple of guys that have drawn the ire of fans in 2015, and that was Andy Levitre, and a couple of penalties from him, a very untimely one in the last game there. You know, Mike Person played center. They moved him over from guard to center, had a couple of turnovers there. Actually didn't play in the last game, lost his position there to Gino Gregkowski. So everybody's kind of focused on that. But the tackle play was so outstanding. And Chris Chester was very good in the pass game and the run game. Okay, old veteran. He's got the grays going on.
Roll grade to major gray.
Yeah. But he's a guy that you could depend on in 2015. I think that helped a lot in the overall grading here. Levitre had some bright spots.
Yeah.
Person had some bright spots. It's never as bad as you think when it comes down to this kind of stuff. For me, for Chris Morgan to be named the Pro Football Focus Offensive Line Coach of the Year, I think really says a lot about the players that he's got, how he's developed them, and how they have handled constant change.
And you talk about this offensive line getting put together a week before you're about to have your first game.
Right.
So the stability, everybody else has had time in the offseason to gel. Right. You have time in training camp to gel. You put this offensive line together a week before you're about to play your first game, and you say, all right, let's make this work. And you go out and you start a season 5-0. Obviously, we had some stuff go on, but this is a group that looked for stability throughout the entire year, and to be named this by Pro Football Focus is awesome.
Yeah, I think, you're going into 2016 knowing that you've got some needs that you've got to identify in the interior line.
Right.
But, man, I really feel like, you know, with the amount of change think about the last couple of years, how many offensive line coaches you've had.
Yeah.
You've had Pat Hill, you had Mike Tice, and now you've got Chris Morgan. That's a lot of changeover for these guys. And, I think they've handled it really well. A lot of those guys aren't even here anymore that started out with Pat Hill. So, there's just this constant flux and change with a group that is so reliant on gelling and getting the relationships together, and that can be a really, really kind of tough thing at times.
The communication that goes on up front that a lot of people don't even realize happens up front. And a lot of times you see you're watching a game, you see the quarterback coming up and he's pointing out stuff. Well, you got to remember, the center has already done that. So sometimes he comes out and he's identifying the mic or he's identifying where they should slide the line to, and majority of the time, the quarterback is just giving a reassurance of, okay, that's good. That's where we're going to go. We're going to him. We're going to Mike's 54. Let's do that. And a lot of times, the center has to get all that out to the guard, got to get that all the way out to the tackles. They got to be able to communicate. If you're playing in a loud environment, there's so many things, the snap count, the guard, you know, tapping the center to say, all right, let's go. You see sometimes the guards are tapping the left or right side of the butt, talking to the running backs on which side they're going to block and who you should pick up. There's so much different communication going on up front for a play to be successful, and I think they did a great job of that in the fact of they were just starting to come together, and there were so many things that you had to get in focus with this group. And I think for the fact that you was able to do it with the guys you had in such a short amount of time throughout this long season, I think was a great job by Chris Morgan.
Yeah, it speaks to some really good coaching there for sure. Let's go to our coach. Our coach, Brian Bosek here, break with Bosek. Coach Bosek, how's it going, man?
It's going great. How are you guys?
We're doing awesome, Bo. Thanks, man. There.
Good. Here, you guys ready for a break with Bosek question?
We are. I'm not really sure.
I'm not sure what my answer is going to be, but we're ready. Let's hear where did you get this one from?
You don't want to tell the fans, let me just tell you where I got it first. First? Got
first.
From the internet.
Okay.
Where I get all my questions. Well, not all. Sometimes I think of them myself. Okay. I'll give myself some credit. Sometimes.
You're driving to work and you're like, I wonder about this. Hey, that would be a
The
really
guys would never know.
That's
this
where
one.
I do all my contemplating, is either in the shower or in the car.
Now that I'm ITP, I got long
commute. Ah, look at him. Bringing it back.
See? All
right. What is your oddest but tastiest snack combo?
Bosek, maybe you need to answer that one first.
All
right,
I'll go first.
I have no idea. Oddest, really tastiest combo.
So mine's not much of a snack. It's more of like a drink food combo. It's interesting. It's pizza and chocolate milk.
Ooh, that
it sounds gross, maybe.
And you like that?
But it's delicious, yeah.
Really?
I don't know why.
Your stomach's not blowed up.
Like
your stomach's not just, oh, man, I got it.
I craves it. I don't know. When I have pizza, I'm like, oh, man, chocolate milk would be really good.
I think chocolate milk is good with anything, but having it with pizza, that's too much dairy.
Too much.
It's odd. It's odd. Well, that was loud.
My headphones are going crazy.
You got anything?
Yes. So okay. I've got a couple that I just thought of. And I don't know that they're so much weird because they're becoming more socially acceptable, I believe. But when I was a kid, I used to go to a certain restaurant chain, and I would dip my fries into the chocolate milkshake. Yeah. You ever do that?
I've done that, and I can attest to that.
So the salty sweet combination is really good. By the way, don't take any diet tips from me. but the salty sweet thing is really cool. I don't know. I've really enjoyed that particular combination.
Mm-hmm.
Like pretzels and chocolate or salted caramel. This is a tough one for me. You know what actually is really you mentioned food and drink combination. You ever have pretzels, like rolled gold pretzels, little pretzel and Mountain Dew, or I'm sorry, green nondescript carbonated beverage.
I'm not.
It's really good. So anyway, that's.
What about Snyder's pretzels? That was good too.
Oh,
Schneider's had Snyder's before. Pretzels. Snyder's really good.
It's our preferred.
The only thing that comes to mind for me, I'm pretty fickle with my eating. Mm-hmm. I'm not gonna lie. Yeah. If I like something, that's what I like. If I don't like it, I'm not really gonna try it.
Mm-hmm.
But I probably would eat ranch with anything, almost anything. I don't like that. Yeah, I mean,
I don't care for ranch at all.
I know it's probably good. You're supposed to get a salad, and I get ranch with it. I can't help it, but. I can't really think of anything crazy that I eat. I mean, I guess people eat apples and peanut butter. That's pretty normal, right?
Yeah, I think so.
That's pretty normal.
Bosek was eating peanut butter and celery not long ago.
Yeah, I've seen that too. But
I can't do celery. Does celery have a taste
for you? Carrots and peanut butter, I'll eat that.
Does celery have a taste for you?
I don't eat celery.
I don't eat
it. But yes, it does.
It does?
I think it has a very, very strong flavor.
It has a taste.
Somebody on staff...
So someone ate some celery and started talking to you like, dude, you just ate some celery.
No, somebody said, celery doesn't taste like anything. That's why I eat it. I'm like, what?
That's why I eat it?
It has a ton of flavor, and it's terrible. All of it is awful.
Terrible.
Awful.
I know. As soon as the show's over, I'm going to be thinking a whole bunch of stuff. I can't think of anything right now.
It's about the best we got.
So I've really thought about it for a while, and I just couldn't come up with nothing. I'm really solid on my eating.
I'm really afraid of the video of the week.
Bosek, once again, the video week is for you.
Don't be afraid.
Yeah. Okay. I'm afraid.
Don't be afraid.
Let's take it to the video of the week.
Let's do it.
And here we go. So you're like, what are you watching?
Yeah.
So it's a mannequin prank they got going. Come by.
Oh my gosh, how elaborate is this?
Switch out the fake head for a real head.
You give somebody a heart attack, though. Okay, how do you get it to fall at the same spot every time?
And they work it out with a dude that has to stop. That's what I'm saying. The dude never goes around or nothing. He just waits.
Too many people. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, Jay, wouldn't you have a heart attack at the same
time? Yes.
These are so nice people, too. They pick it. Look at him. He's so confused.
You know me. I scare him.
Look at her face.
Yeah. Like, how...
She's like, what?
Again, how do you get it to... She had to have seen the switch there.
Yeah, that woman probably saw it.
I don't care for this prank much.
She doesn't even try to... Oh! He tried to pick up by the wig. Oh, man.
Oh my gosh.
Got her the best.
Well, that was fun, Bo.
Yep.
That was funny,
man.
I was
like, no one kicked it. It's like just a random floating head. Someone just came by.
Well, or did something kicked more it one time, didn't pick it up.
To pick it up.
Well, they saw the reason why they're going to pick it up is because they saw it fall off the mannequin ahead of them.
Which was a great
setup. Trying to be nice people.
Like,
this is what nice people do, Bosek.
That's true.
So pick it up and try to, you know. Bosek. That was very elaborate, though. That's a lot of people.
So, Bosek, you saw that, and you're going to walk by, you're going to kick it, huh?
No.
Yes. Yes.
I would not. I would have helped. I would have ran. I would have went faster. I wouldn't.
So you wouldn't have got caught by the board, huh?
No.
I think you would have.
Yeah. I don't think so. But
yeah, the randomness,
we'll never know. Called. You know what we will know?
We will know.
2 weeks
next,
from now.
2 weeks from now, we are going to know who is the real deal champion. Who the real deal is. We couldn't have planned this any better. We kicked John out, make him have surgery.
This worked out awesome.
Now we've got, let's remember here, we did our Picks to Click postseason edition. I am tied with DJ Shockley, our regular season champion. So we all picked two teams, one AFC, one NFC. I've got Carolina. DJ's got Denver.
And I already got one championship. I'm trying to go get the ring, baby.
Another one. I'm rooting for you, buddy. I'm really hoping that I do not have bragging rights on this one. It's going to come down to it. We picked it well, I think.
Mostly, I appreciate you putting me on top right here. That's awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, so that this is all going to come down to next week or 2 weeks from now. Excuse me, I'm always thrown off. But I don't think there should be 2 weeks between the Super Bowl.
I know,
man. Just play the game crying out loud.
It's already built up, man. I mean, come on.
I don't know how many stories I need to see on how this could be paid.
Well, you know what? They're just trying to keep the interest in the Pro Bowl.
I get it.
Because they think if the Super Bowl's gone, people are going to tap out. Or the players, like the season's over, I'm tapped out.
You know what I miss is the quarterback challenge.
Oh, yeah.
They used to do during the Pro Bowl. Are you old enough for that or no?
No, I'm old enough.
Okay.
just barely. Yeah, just barely.
You'd have all these guys, Jeff George, Randall Cunningham,
slinging it,
and just slinging like Dante Culpepper out there, Warren Moon, just
pasting the going across the field,
the footballs that are painted. Wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah.
I think we should do a Falcon Cast football challenge.
I like it.
I'm down.
Sometime it'll be a video only for those of us who are listening on iTunes. I'm You'll have to catch the video of that one. DJ Shockley versus Jay Adams versus John Michaels versus Brian Bosack.
Oh, wow. Bosack, you're in it.
Versus Brian Bosack in a quarterback challenge.
You're in it.
Old school with the moving targets and all that kind of stuff. Man, that would be fun, wouldn't it?
Sounds great.
Let's make that happen.
Right behind us in the barn.
Oh, yeah, I got the QB head in there. Yeah.
Start.
Just getting it warm.
I like it.
You can still sling it.
Oh, yeah.
I know that. I know that. What's the longest pass you ever threw? Do you know? Unofficial. We'll go.
Unofficial.
Unofficial. 93 yards.
We were in Minnesota, and Chris Redman, who used to was another quarterback here. We were in Minnesota in pregame warmups. We were always just out there, having a good time, trying to hit the goalposts,
still do, yeah.
And we're about to go in, and Red's like, I bet you so-and-so that you can't throw it this far. So I'm on the goal line. He's at the 35-yard line.
On the other side.
On the other side.
Other side.
So he's,
we know you can throw 35 yards.
Yeah, so he gets over there, and he's like, okay, come on. I said, all right, I'm already warm.
Oh, yeah.
I called Mike, let it go. This is Redman right here. So it ended up going about 84 yards. Wow. He walks from here and just walks into the locker room.
Wow.
He didn't talk to me for 15 minutes when we first came back in the locker room. He's just looking at me like, dude, that's stupid. That's ridiculous.
Jeez.
Why would you do that?
DJ, I'm not sure that I walk 84 yards. Yes.
So
that's impressive.
I was pretty excited about winning that bet, so it was awesome.
Well, we're gonna make that happen.
I don't know if that's
like
gonna, we're gonna make that happen. That's gonna be fun. And we'll have our this happens every year is our AtlantaFalcons.com combine.
Ooh.
Has to come up here shortly, as the combine will be next month. Some of us will be heading up there to Indianapolis, so we'll get you ready with that.
I think we should all do at least one of the combine drills.
I
demonstrated everybody at least do one, whether it's the 5-and-5, the L drill, the 40, the vertical. Should all do one.
My days of that are
over. We should all do one.
My days of that are over. We do need John Michaels to run the 40, though. He'll probably get hurt.
Yeah,
that's a thing.
We might not want John Michaels to do nothing.
He's a liability.
He might hurt himself on the vertical.
Yeah, as he, you know, he's out again because he's hurt. With this time of his
tooth now, I mean,
stupid teeth.
Nobody knows what John Michael does.
Man. I know. Well, John, feel better. Remember, you can listen to us on iTunes. Follow us there. Review us. Give us, you know, be honest. If you don't like it, tell us.
Let us know, man. Tweet us, man. Let us know. We appreciate all people who do tweet us.
Yes, there's a lot of you. There's a lot of you, and we appreciate it. And we'll see you next week. Maybe we'll have, like, Chipmunk John next week with, like, you know, the blown-out cheeks. So. But that would be amazing. But we'll see you next week on the Falcon Cast. Thanks for joining us.
Get a flag.